Text number. Eleven through to 15. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ye tuiha jitha amunya vidim sita jantava paratra yama yatanam upagatam ta eva roravo bhutva jatatam eva vim shanti tasmat roravam iti ahururu iti sarpad ati kuru kuru satvas padeshaha. Translation. And perfect. Praise divine grace. In the Bhaktivedanta Samshri Prabhupada Ki. In this life, an envious person commits violent acts against many living entities. Therefore, after his death, he is taken to a hell by Yamaraj, whose living entities were hurt by him. Those living entities who were hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. Learned scholars call this hell Rourava. Not generally seen in this world, the Ruru is more envious than a snake. Please repeat. In this life, an envious person commits violent acts against many living entities. And therefore, after his death, when he is taken to hell by Yamaraj, those living entities who were hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. Learned scholars call this hell Rourava. Not generally seen in this world, the Ruru is more envious than the snake. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, the Ruru is also known as Bharashringa, Atikurasya Bharashringakya Satvasya Apadesha Samgya. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this in his Sandava, Ururu Satasya Swayam Muninayeva Tika Vitanal Lokeshwa Aprashita Evadyam Jantu Vishesha. Thus, although rurus are not seen in this world, their existence is confirmed by the Shastra. So these rurus, Sridhar Swami says that they are the rurus are like antelopes, some kind of antelope. It means they'll have long, big long horns, and they'll just give a lot of trouble to those persons who mistreated others in previous life. Text number 12. Punishment in the cell, in the hell called Maharurava, is compulsory for a person who maintains his own body by hurting others. In this hell, the rural animals known as Kravadya torment him and eat his own flesh. The animalistic person who lives simply in the bodily concept of life is not excused. He is put into the hell known as the Maharova and attacked by rural animals known as Kravyadas. So I think, was it Murari the hunter? He had the vision of, he was half killing the animals, was that Murari? Half killing animals. And when Narad Muni come and saw all these animals half dead, he said, why are you only half killing these animals? He said, it's our family tradition, my father told me to do like this. So Narad Muni said that, oh, you're a hunter in this life, but what about your next life? You know what's going to happen to you? He said, well, I've got to maintain my family somehow or another. I'm a hunter by trade. He said, you're maintaining your family. You ask your family members if they will take some of your karmas because you're killing the animals for them. So he asked his family members, will you take some of the karma? Yeah, no way we're going to take that karma. You can kill the animals, but we're not going to accept any karma. No way. So then he became transformed by the grace of Narad Muni and became a great devotee. So great he wouldn't even tread on an ant. But otherwise, you have to punish heavily like this, do you? Animals that bite you, they tear your flesh and chew it off. And the thing is, you don't die in these hellish planets. You can fall unconscious. That's the best thing you can do, be unconscious for a little while. But otherwise, you don't die. You get a particular type of body when you go to these hellish planets. It's a subtle kind of body, but it doesn't die. You see? Give you so much torture after torture after torture. Text number 13. For the maintenance of their bodies and the satisfaction of their tongues, cruel persons cook poor animals and birds alive. Such persons are condemned even by man-eaters. In their next life, they are carried by the Yamadutas to the hell known as Kumbhipaka, where they are cooked in boiling oil. A nice picture in this. You can see them. The Yamadutas having a cook up there. I don't think you see from there. Anyway, they're pushing them under the wok of oil and they're pushing them under the oil with sticks. They're enjoying it as well. They got that kind of karma. They like really, they can really let everything out illegally. That's their duty, that's their service. Yeah, so especially shellfish, oysters, lobsters, winkles, clams, what they call clams, all that shellfish stuff you get by the seaside, generally they're all alive and they just throw them in the boiling something, water or something. So this is their destination. The little winkle seller by the side on the beach, he looks kind of peaceful. Selling his little wrinkles, but he's got to go through so many hellish, but boil it alive. Text number 14. The killer of a brahmana is put into hell known as Kalashutra, which has a circumference of 80,000 miles and which is made entirely from copper, heated from below by fire and from above by the scorching sun. The copper surface on this planet is extremely hot. Thus the murderers of a brahmana suffer from being burned both internally and externally. Internally he is burning with hunger and thirst, and externally he is burning from the scorching heat of the sun and the fire beneath the copper surface. So sometimes he lies down, sometimes he sits, sometimes he stands up, sometimes he runs here and there. He must suffer in this way for many thousands of years, as there are the hairs on the body of an animal. One thousand years for every hair on the body of an animal. It's a long, long time. Yeah, so he cannot escape the heat. He's lying down, sitting down, running. It means he's trying to get away from it. You can't do one thing for very long. You can't stand for very long. You can't lie down for very long. Constantly being harassed by the heat. And what an existence. Text number 15. If a person deviates from the path of the Vedas in the absence of an emergency, the servants of Yamaraj put him into the hell known as the Ashi Patravana, where they beat him with whips. When he runs hither and thither, fleeing from the extreme pain on all sides, he runs into the palm trees with leaves like sharpened swords. Thus, injured all over his body and fainting at every step, he cries out, "Oh, what shall I do now? How shall I be saved?" This is how one suffers who deviates from the accepted religious principles. So just by deviating from religious principles, you've got to suffer a hell like this. Or you may make your own religious principles. Now you have to suffer all this. There is a story from the Padma Purana. Vyasadeva is telling Jaimini, his disciple. And there was this king, he's very pious. His name was Satyadharma, truthful Dharma, that was his name. And he didn't do anything wrong, except one thing. And for that, he had to go and see Yamaraj. So Yamaraj asked Chitragupta, he keeps all the notes, Chitragupta, he's a scribe, keeps all the record of all the sins and pious activities. So he said that one time the king was out in the forest with his party, and suddenly there was a tiger was roaring, and all the deer get frightened. And so the deer run, he saw the king and the party, so the deer run towards the party to take shelter of the king. But the king was very cruel and he brought out his sword and he killed the deer. So he killed the king is supposed to protect all the citizens, so the deer and animals are also citizens under his protection. So when a person comes to a king or a leader to take protection, then he has to protect him. So the deer had that idea, he wanted protection from the lion. But somehow or another king, due to his Kshatriya nature I guess, he killed that deer with his sword. So therefore he had to go and see this to a hell, just for that one mistake. Otherwise he was a very pious king. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, I'm not sure if it was the Paranjana story, King Paranjana. And he did everything nicely actually. He performed all of his dharma very nicely. He did all of his duties very nicely. But he had to see a hell. And his only fault was he was attached a little bit to his wife and his children and his family. Very stringent laws of material nature. He didn't do anything wrong, simply because of some attachment, which is natural. Everybody has attachment for their children and wife. And simply because of that attachment, he had to see a hellish situation. So they had to see this Atipatravan. Patra means leaf, vana means forest. The forest, the leaves, they're like sharp swords. So he's been beaten like anything by the Yamadutas. Yeah. Been beaten like anything. sees a slight chance of escape into the forest, so he runs through the forest through the branches and leaves, and it's all like sharp swords, and he gets gashed all over, the whole body is cut to pieces, and so he has to go back on the road again, and there he has to face beating. Then he thinks he can escape again, and he runs into the forest, and it's all sharp swords. So it just goes on and on like this. There's no let up of this suffering. So he had to see this. This Atipatra won hell for millions of years just because he killed one deer. And that wasn't all. After that, he went to another hell known as the Vyagravaksha, which is not mentioned as one of the hells here. So there's many, many more hells as well that I'm not mentioned here. And he spent millions of years there also. It probably has something to do with tiger, because Vyagra means tiger. So most probably you're attacked by tigers all the time. But millions of yugas. How stringent these laws of material nature are. One little mistake costing millions and millions of births. So, a lot of trouble. After that, both the king and the queen, she was also very pious, they died at the same time. And they became frogs. After all that punishment, they became two frogs. But they could remember their previous life when they were king and queen. So there's even more suffering. Prabhupada said, if you remember your life, that's why Krishna takes away remembrance at the time of birth. Prabhupada said, if you remembered in your past life, you was a king or something like that, and you got a bad bargain this time, your whole life would be spent lamenting and in great misery. But they could remember that. They could remember they were a king and queen. And now they're frogs, two frogs. So they're lamenting for this now. That's after the suffering. So then one day they saw a group of brahmanas coming on the pilgrimage to the Ganga. And they were chanting Ganga, Ganga, Ganga's name. So they said, let's go to the Ganga. Let's make a pilgrimage to the Ganga and we'll throw ourselves in the Ganga and we'll drown. I don't know if frogs can drown. But that was their idea, to jump into the Ganga and drown. So they set out on a pilgrimage to Ganga, the frogs hopping. And then suddenly there was a black serpent, a big serpent there. He was very hungry, very ferocious. And he hadn't eaten for about 3 or 4 days. So he was very hungry. So he came to devour these two frogs. And they said, no, please don't take us. You know, we were king and queen in our last previous birth. We had to suffer so much. And what is our fault? Why you should eat us? You know, you should look after all living entities. Nobody, this is the worst thing. The best charity you can do is to give someone back his life. So if you let us live, it'd be a great charitable work on your behalf. And the frog said, I'm here, it's my nature. Why the Lord has given me this body? And why he's given you that body? You are my food. One man's food is another. You're meant to be eaten by me. That's my dharma. So there's no sin in occurring in dharma. So if I eat you, there's no sin on my behalf. So very mercilessly, he swallowed them up quickly. But because they were on pilgrimage to Ganga, then they got immense benefit from it. And then demigods, Indra came down. And they said, after all your austerities and things, hellish punishment, simply because you went on pilgrimage to the Ganga, you died on the way to Ganga. You didn't even reach the Ganga. They were on the way to the Ganga. And they got killed. But Indra came down. So then they enjoyed celestial happiness for so many years. And then after that, in the heavenly regions, and then a Vaikuntha airplane came down, and they got four arms, and they got on the airplane and went back home, back to Godhead. happy ending, but quite a long space in between of suffering everybody has to go through if we are not following the Vedic principles, as it says here. We deviate from the Vedas. In the absence of emergency, sometimes it's an emergency. So, purport is a purport here. There is actually only one religious principle. Dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. The only religious principle is to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Famous shloka. Religion is established by God. Dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. This is religion, if anybody asks. Religion is that which is instructed by God. So the only religious principle is to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, especially in the age of Kali, everyone is atheist. The Prabhupada said in India, those who profess atheism become atheism. And he said when they are leaving their body, he said they're shivering in their boots out of fear, because they have this knowledge from childhood that they chosen to become atheistic, but they know that this knowledge is there deep down. So Prabhupada said they're shaking in their boots out of fear. I profess myself as an atheist, but now I got to face Krishna in the form of death. And it's going to be very, very, they know it. So they're very, very, they're going to be very, very scared. So even if you can't escape by becoming, saying, just changing the name atheism or agnostic, it doesn't change the laws of God. Just because you profess to be something or other, the law is law, and it's very, very stringent, we see here. Everyone is an atheist. People do not even believe in God, what to speak of following His words. The word Nitya Veda Pata can also mean one's own set of religious principles. Formerly, there was only one Veda Path, or set of religious principles. Now there are many. It doesn't matter which set of religious principles one follows. The only injunction is that he must follow them strictly. An atheist or Gnostic is one who does not believe in the Vedas. However, even if one takes up a different system of religion, according to this verse, he must follow the religious principles he has accepted. Whether one is a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian, he must follow his own religious principles. However, if one concocts his own religious path within his mind, or if one follows no religious principles at all, he is punished in the hell known as Atipatravana. In other words, a human being must follow some religious principles. If he does not follow any religious principles, he is no better than an animal. As Kali Yuga advances, people are becoming godless and taking up so-called secularism. They do not know the punishment awaiting them in Astipatravana, as described in this verse. Secularism. I think it means we are secular, therefore we won't preach any religion. Does it mean that? Secularism. If we teach Hinduism in our schools, then the Mohammedans will complain, the Christians will complain. So therefore, we are secular. We won't teach anything. It's simply another name of atheism, Gnostic, atheism. They just made it into different words, secularism. So that doesn't save anyone. You give atheism another name, secular. The thing is, they're not teaching about God in the school. The school is secular. It means we don't won't speak any about any God. That means atheists, nothing. They're not teaching anything about God. So they got to suffer also. Concocting their own ideas. So now so many parts in Christianity, I guess they're sticking to the basic principles of Christianity. You know how many branches of Christianity there are from the original church? Something like 27,000 different branches. And Hinduism also, many, many branches. Mohammed also, many branches of Muslim religion. Krishna consciousness, in the future we will get many branches, Prabhupada said. There will be many branches, but ISKCON will set the standard. He was talking with a priest, Protestant, and he said, Prabhupada said, why Protestant? He said, well, whoever the founding fathers of that Protestant philosophy were, they didn't agree with the Catholic Church. So they wanted to make some changes, but the Catholic Church wouldn't do it. So he said, then we change, and it's a better thing. It's a better idea. It's a better thing for the people. It's a better thing. We think it's better, at least. But Prabhupada said, if it's a better thing, well, why didn't you keep the name Catholicism? He said, well, they wouldn't accept us. He said, that they won't accept you, but if you've got something better, or if you're doing Catholic perfect, more perfect, then why change the name into Protestant? That means you've deviated from the original. You may be right what you've done, but you've deviated from the original. But Prabhupada wouldn't let him off. He said, no, it's a deviation, even though it may feel like a better way to make people religious, what religion is for. But you've deviated. If you were right, why did you deviate? This is Prabhupada's argument. Of course, he can say anything. So that's the main branch, the Protestant. And then how many 27,000 other deviations of Christianity? So, and Vedas also, there's Yasatmiku. That one should be single-minded, determined, fixed determination in the orders of the Vedas, in the orders of the Shastra, Krishna is saying, Bhagavad Gita. Those who are not, their consciousness is many branched, bahu shaka, here and there. So this today, we have unlimited groups. They're claiming to be religious groups, claiming to be coming from the Vedas, claiming to be coming from some authoritative religious source. So many branches, Bahu Shaka. But they're all practically speculations, most of them. So follow the path. Now here also you get deviations in the, not deviations, but varieties in the path. Because the Vedas has two purposes. One is to take you back home, back to Godhead. Another one is to let you enjoy in the material world. After all, this is the reason why we're here. This is why we chose to come to the material world. So Krishna's created it. I have to feed your desire. So there's a lot of enjoyment here. All the other heavenly planets. Right now we're in the hellish planets. Okay. Not so much enjoyment, a lot of suffering. But there's so many other bhashas and Deva-loka. A lot of enjoyment is there because the living entity wanted that. So Krishna's created it. So the Vedas, they are there. You want to be happy in this material world, maximum happiness. You follow the Vedas. This is what we're recommending. If you do this, you get maximum happiness. You may choose another way. You may formulate some philosophy, but you're never going to be as happy as Krishna's program. So follow the Vedas, and you'll get happiness, because the Vedas will take you from Tama to Rajas to Shatva. Shatagun means happiness. Rajagun means distress. Tamagun means ignorance. So the Vedas that progress the living entity through these different stages and bring him to Shatagun. That's the greatest happiness he can get in the material world. The Siddhi. Come to the mode of goodness. So good, but still, it doesn't solve the real problem, Krishna says. Birth, old age, disease and death. It doesn't solve that problem. But if you want a nice religion where you can all be happy in family and society and everything, okay, here is the way to do it. So you get these different aspects of the Vedas dealing with different mentalities. This was the beginning of this chapter. Preacher Maharaj is asking me. Why so many varieties in this world? He said, because there's three modes of material nature. And you combine them, you get, just like you have three colors, red, yellow, blue. You mix red and yellow, you get orange. You mix red and blue, you get purple. You mix yellow and orange, you get... And then you that's three into three, you get nine colors. Then you formulate these again, then you get nine nines or 81. Then mix them again, you get 81 times 81. It comes out to 8,400,000. Because this means you can... 8,400,000 varieties of combinations of the material nature. So therefore there are 8,400,000 species of life, because you've got 8,400,000 types of desires you can have if you combine the different modes of material nature together. So that's why there's so much variety everywhere. Then he goes on to talk about the hellish varieties. But it's there due to the mixtures of the modes of nature. So, Veda is always trying to upgrade everything. At least so they can be happy in the material world. So then we get something we call Rini. Rini means debtor. Now when you take birth as a human, you're a debtor. You have debtor to your mother and father. They gave you the facility to take birth. You're a debtor to the demigods, you get your heat and light. You're a debtor to the sages, you get the knowledge coming from the sages. You're a debtor to the gurus. You're a debtor to the government. They make roads, you're indebted to your family members. You have to pay off these debts, five or six. All right. From birth, you have to pay off your debt. That is your duty as a human. So then you've got to worship the devatas, you've got to worship the pitras, the forefathers. By the grace of our grandfathers, we are here. So worship the devas, worship the pitras, worship the buddhas. And then you can become free from the debt. You have to propitiate them, worship them, you come free from the debt. But the problem is, what? What is the problem there? You're paying off your debts, you're a very good boy. This is what you're supposed to be doing, you're a very good girl. You're paying off your debts, you're worshipping the demigods, worshipping the pitras, worshipping the buddhas, worshipping... What is the problem there? What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? What? Next birth? Yes. This is the defect. Oh, Krishna says those who worship the devatas, they go to the Devata planet. Those who worship the pitchers, they go to Pitcher Lotus. Those who worship the Buddhas, they go to Buddhas. So you've been a very good boy, a very good girl, you've done your duty, but what is the result? You're in the heavenly planets for some time. Again, you've got to take birth again. So you don't solve the real problem of birth and death. It doesn't, but it's Vedic. But because you want to enjoy here is a way to do it. A little bit of suffering in between, or a lot of suffering in between. That there's still no let up in this material world. It's being driven by the goodness, driven by passion, driven by ignorance. No let up. Someone was saying, peace. Oh, it's so nice, peaceful, peace, peaceful here, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, peace, peace. At death you get your 6 months peace, that's all. Means when you take birth in the womb, 6 months you're unconscious. Prabhupada said, that's your peace. After that, again, you're suffering. You wake up conscious of your position in the airtight bag in the mother's womb, all kinds of pains and everything. Yeah, Prabhupada said, that's your peace. What peace? This is your 6 months after death. This is your peace. You're unconscious practically. So this is the problem. By worshipping the Devatas, you end up in Devaloka. By worshipping Pitras, you go to the Pitraloka. It's called, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, right? You're trying to follow the Vedic principles. So, this Pitraloka is very close to the hellish planets. See? The description we had here, you get the different subterranean heavenly planets, and then at the bottom of them and in between the Garbha ocean, this is the where the hellish planets are, and Pitraloka is there also, and Yamaraj also lives on Pitraloka. And you have to be pious and worship your forefathers. Goes on in India, pious families, you see, they will always have their worship their forefathers. Actually, anywhere you go, even in a little tea shop outside, you see he's got a picture of his grandfather up there, and he offers a little bit of incense every time. So, when he stops offering his incense, his great grandfather, he has to leave Pitraloka. As long as he's being propagated by the generations, the family generations, they're worshipping their forefathers, their great-great-grandfathers. They stay in Pitraloka. When they stop worshipping them, you know, after a few grandfathers or one, two grandfathers, they take this picture off and they put the other grandfather there. When they stop being worshipped, the great-great-grandfather where he was, he has to come and take birth again. Your worship kept him up there. Your worship of the forefathers kept him up there. Well, it's quite pious, but the problem is it's only a temporary situation. Then you stop worship, then he comes back again. And you know where he takes his birth? In exactly the same family. Exactly the same community. So these Goenkas and Patels, these big communities, you take your birth in there, birth after birth after birth after birth. Eventually you move on. The soul is not satisfied. The soul is searching for, where am I going to get that satisfaction? So he tries it in Pitraloka. After many, many births, he gets indication. So he changes his mode of worship. He changes his Devata or something like that. For many, many births, and again, the soul is not satisfied. Again, so like this, he goes 8,400,000 species. That takes him down to the worms in the stool and things like that. Searching for that ultimate happiness, which is taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, which the ultimate solution for all the problems of life, is stopping the birth and death process and go back to Goloka. There is no more coming back here into this material world again. So like that, the pitchers will come and they'll you worship them. Yeah, all the Indian communities, that's why they're prosperous and they're pious, because same stock is there, the same mentality is there. Generally they're money makers. But you can understand it's due to their piety, their dharma. So they worship, so dharma you get out of them. Who was that devotee who said, London temple is like Patel Lok. It's a joke among the Indians. You get the Patel community. Who was that? Gopa Prindapal. He was a real comedian. I don't know if you know him. Gopa Prindapal. He said this is like Patel Lok, because most of the Indian congregation were coming in that caste of Patel. So he said this is like Patel Lok. I think Bhaktivedanta Manor. Anyway, I think Yamaraj lives up there also, so all the forefathers, everyone. But Yamaraj has two forms. And one is very, very ferocious. He's ferocious, ugly. He's the one who sends everyone to the hell. And the other one is as a Vaishnava. He has tilaks and everything. There he's chanting the glories of Gauranga Krishna. Worshipful deities. So the devotees, they don't see that Yamaraj, the fearsome Yamaraj, they see the Vaishnava Yamaraj. Prabhupada was saying it. He says some living entities are born from eggs, some from the womb, some from perspiration. It's like cockroaches, I think, maybe mosquitoes. Harishwara Prabhu asked him, who is the father then? Who is the mother and father? If they're born from perspiration, who is the mother and father? And then Prabhupada said, material nature is the mother. So the sweat is like the mother. And the father is Yamaraj, because he sends the souls to the next destination. So he said, Yamaraj is the father and material nature becomes the mother. So that's his Yamaraj's service to Krishna, to give everyone their equal, their dues, their punishment or their suffering. That was all going on down in near Patala Loka, beneath Patala Loka, Pitri Loka. So although, like, the Pitraloka are these hellish places, generally, when a person dies, he has to see a little bit of hell first. Like this king. He has to see a lot of hell, actually. But one little mistake. So then, you know, they take a lot of... So then we offer some pinda, some prasad, some... What do you say? You take the ashes, put the ashes in the Ganga. Now in this function, where you put in the Ganga, then the Ganga carries that down to the Bay of West Bengal. There at the end, if you see a map of India, you'll see what they call the 100 mouths of the Ganga. The Ganga splits into hundreds of streams. Where it meets the ocean, the Bay of Bengal, it's about 20 miles wide, I think. And there's so many streams are coming, like they call the mouths of the Ganga. So when we like do the ashes, the immersion ceremony here, for the benefit of that soul, who generally may have gone to the hellish planet for a little while to see a bit of suffering, going to go down there anyway to see Yamaraj. Generally, the devotees don't have to see, but most people, they would have to see a little bit of hellish planet. So when you do that ceremony in the Ganga, you put the ashes in the Ganga, then the Ganga takes that down to the Bay of West Bengal. And those different mouths of the Ganga goes down to the lower planetary systems and right down to the hellish planet. So when you make the offering here, that particular stream of the Ganga that goes down to that particular planet where your ancestry is, that the Ganga takes that and takes it down that particular stream to that particular hell where your relative or descendant may be suffering for a little while. And when that goes, when you perform that ceremony, goes down there, it releases the soul from that hellish condition. That's a good thing. This is the power of Gangadevi. So Gangadevi goes down. She comes from the spiritual world, purifies the whole universe, purifies this Bharadvaja, and then she goes underground to purify the hellish planets. And similarly, so this is the route down to the hellish planets. Similarly, it said that the Nagas on the heavenly, subterranean heavenly planets, that's the way they come up into the material. I think, I wasn't here for the class, but someone told me, Gita Nagari Prabhu was quoting from the Mahabharata, that these lower heavenly planets, mostly they are Nagas, snaky people. They come up that way, they come up through the Ganga in their craft. So what we see is UFOs and things like that, the spacecraft. It's not coming from outer space, they're coming from under the water. They come from the lower regions, they come through the Ganga, and then whatever they do, UFOs, what kind of it. Anyway, so Lord Ananda is the Lord of the snakes here. So, that story from Bhagavatam is Maharaj Shagara, he had 60,000 sons, and Indra stole the sacrificial horse, then eventually they found it in the Kapila Muni ashram. They thought Kapila Muni, there's the horse, there's the Kapila Muni meditation, he stole the horse. They became so angry with Kapila Muni, who is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God. They became so angry they all burst into flames. So there's nothing but ashes. 60,000 sons became a pile of ashes. So the son or the grandson, Anushman, he found out what had happened. He said that to Kapila Muni, how can they be delivered? Kapila Muni said, only if you bring Ganga and it washes the ashes, then they can become delivered. So then he eventually brought the Ganga, then it washed all the ashes at the Kapila Muni ashram, then they all got demigod bodies and went back to the heavenly planets. So that's the route down through the Ganga. Also the sages use this route for going up, don't they? We have the four Kumaras. They said they suddenly appeared that some Jagannath was going on, and their seekers were still wet. Because they travel through the waterways, they travel in the Ganga and used to come up. And it mentions in one place in Bhagavatam, their hair was still wet there. Because they just come out, they travel around the Ganga. So, Ananta Dev lives. He's supporting all the universes, so he's in control of everything. Then he destroys it when it's time. And so these are the stringent laws of material nature that we're faced with. If we become a devotee, Sarvadhanam parigyaja mamikam sarap. We give up all other processes of worship and everything. And Krishna says he'll save us. He'll save us from all those hellish conditions, from the heavenly conditions, from the midway conditions. If we surrender to Krishna, he will nullify all of the sinful activities that we will keep us in hell for God knows how long. For a devotee, they won't have to see Krishna. He promises that they'll all come back home to him. So this is the glories of devotional service and the glories of the message of the Lord who is coming at different times, especially of Gauranga, the great purifier of the age of Kali. When they were churning the ocean of milk to get nectar, first the poison come up. So that's very, very dangerous. The whole ocean is full of poison. So how to get rid of that? So they asked Lord Shiva if he could take that poison. So Lord Shiva, he drank the whole ocean of poison. Nobody can do that. Kept it in his throat, and it was so hot his throat became blue. Therefore he's known as Nilkanta, blue throat. So that was burning like anything, a whole ocean of poison. So he had to counteract that poison. So what counteracts poison is nectar. So he had to get nectar to counteract the whole ocean of poison. So that nectar, Lord Shiva, he went to see Anantadev on Shvetadvip. And there he heard the Ananta Samhita from Anantadev, Lord. And this Ananta Samhita is glorifying Sri Navadvip Dham. It's glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's glorifying the holy name of Krishna. It's glorifying the Sankirtan movement. So Lord Shiva received that from Anantadev, the Ananta Samhita, and he kept it in his throat. That it counteracted all the ocean of poison. The nectar of the holy name and the nectar of Gauranga Mahaprabhu and the nectar of Sri Navadvip Dham. So it's quite safe to stay here in Navadvip Dham. Actually, it's the most safest situation in this material world. We can stay here and glorify Gauranga Mahaprabhu and chant the holy names. Then we can, no need to worry about up or down or in between. Go back home, back to Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shama Veda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Nitai Go Prema Nandi. Hare Krishna, thank you. Any comment? Yes. Where does he mean that?
What if they dress like someone is dressed like Vaishnava, if one chants holy name, but still causes others to suffer? So which face of Yamaraj will he see?
No, because he's chanting the holy names, then he will be respected in that position. That will never be lost for him. If he has implicit faith in the holy name at the time of death, then he won't see Yamaraj. Prabhupada said even all the different upper sampradayas, and when we argue with them, say they're bogus, but Prabhupada said at least they're chanting Hare Krishna. That's it. It's based around chanting Hare Krishna. So they make a lot of advancement. even though they're philosophically they may be off a bit. So if you're chanting Hare Krishna, then you'll take another birth where you'll associate with devotees and give up the mentality of hurting other people.
About those who suffered because of that person. If Krishna takes care of animals who are killed, that after one's death, they get revenge. They torture the person who killed them. So what about living entities? What about humans who suffered because of such people? Who may be like Vaishnavas, but still cause sufferings to others.
Here it said that they take birth as these rurus or animals, and they kill them. And another place it said that they don't actually take birth as the rurus, but the rurus carry their give the same punishment that was due to them from the other people. They carry the other people's who got punished. The rurus carry that, and they inflict the pain on the person who inflicted pain on the other party. So two things is that one takes birth as the rurus and other animals to torment. I think in anyway. Yeah, and the other one is that the rurus, they like carrying that from the people who were punished. They carry that karma, and they inflict it on the pain of it. They have a choice. Attachment to family. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's what he said in the Paranjana story. I think it's Paranjana. He had attachment for his, looking after his family and money, so that was his attachment. So he had to see a little bit of hell. Yeah, so they may get a little bit of hellish planet than the good. Generally, when a person dies, he gets the bad result first. Then he goes and gets the good result. The King Nigra, he became the lizard in the well, and Krishna lifted him out. He said, "Why are you down in the well?" He said, "Well, I was." He did something wrong. So the Yamaraj said, "You want punishment first, or you want your happiness first?" He said, "I'll take the punishment first." Prabhupada said, "He's a fool. You should have accepted the happiness first." But he was thinking, if I'm happy now, I've got that anxiety that in the future I'm going to suffer. So he said, "Let me give me the suffering first. But anything can happen." Like it did happen. So he said he could have chosen the happiness and seen a bit of a heavenly planet first, but he chose to see the. But generally, that's the position. They see the suffering first, and then they see the good, get a result of good karma. It's intricate. Even I've been through it millions of times, living in hellish planets. Still I can't remember. Well, it's intricate. When we're talking about karma, it's very difficult, especially when the Lord is involved also, then it takes on a new angle. Dati no pamkam verse. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna.